Welcome in on a Monday to Husker Max Today. I'm Caleb Henry. That is Nick Hanley. We're here with you for the entire hour. A lot to get into from the weekend, including Husker softball with a 3-2 start to their season down in Florida. We'll be talking with voice of Nebraska softball, Nate Rohr, a little bit later on that. Nebraska men's basketball. 4-game winning streak. The latest one had to come back a little bit and then kind of just ran away with stuff at the end, got all the free throws, had a lot of fun, and suddenly looking almost as close as they've been all year to a lock to the NCAA tournament. We'll talk with Omaha World Herald's Wilson more about that and get our thoughts as well. And Super Bowl last night. At least we all had good food, right? Like that's where we're at. First thing I want to get to, though, Nick, before we dive into the Super Bowl, because this happened, our last show was on Thursday, and this came out on Friday, and I know we talked about it, and we knew this was going to happen, but it was, what was the old thing? It used to be, it was Facebook official when you were in a relationship. It was, yes, Facebook official. Well, now it's social media official. It's Twitter official. Nebraska baseball put out their radio crew for the season, which includes David Gustafson, Ben McLaughlin, and our own Nick Hanley.
Thank you. Yes, I can't wait. I mean, I was hoping it was official. We'd already, you know, booked our flight for this week to Arizona, so I would have had some explaining to do to my wife if that was the case. But yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people already know I've had several years in with Nebraska baseball. 6 years before I took the little break when I switched radio stations, but have not only worked with Ben McLaughlin, but have built a great friendship with him. Ben is one of my closest friends. And then David Gustafson and I, we go way back, and I was at David's wedding, and David and I worked together in Columbus, Nebraska. So being reunited with him, he and I used to do some Creighton baseball games back in the day as well. Heck, we even coached a little baseball together in Columbus. So it's a very, very familiar crew. I think we're going to be great off of each other, but as I've posted, as Ben has posted, as we all have, there's going to be a seat empty in that booth that just, there's no way any of us, all three of us, even all three of us combined can match what I think is the heart and soul of Nebraska broadcast, Nebraska football, and obviously baseball broadcast, and Greg Sharp. And, you know, just we're thinking of them. We're just hoping for the best. Just want Greg to be remembered, especially during these broadcasts, which I know he will be, because I know he's going to be listening when he can as well. And he texted me last week that he was so excited to hear that first weekend out in Arizona, and see what the baseball team could be, because everybody knows Greg bleeds Husker red. Mm-hmm. Football is a passion for his, but I don't know how many people realize how much, not only how good he is in baseball, but also how much he looked forward to the baseball season, and especially the road trips, and being on those road trips and being able to socialize with the team and with the radio crew. I mean, these are great times. Yes, these are work trips, but we have so much fun being integrated with the baseball team. And as I've said many times too, Will Bolden, that coaching staff, do such a good job of bringing you in, making you feel like you're part of the team. And I know that's something that Greg is definitely going to be missing as well, but more than anything, we're going to be missing Greg on those calls too. And just thinking of our good friend, Greg Sharp.
We have been spoiled by the talent out of the Huskers radio network. And obviously Greg Sharp, all of you guys reuniting on the baseball broadcast, but Nate Rohr on softball, yeah, as we'll talk a little bit later today, Kent Pavelka, Jake Muehlheisen, Matt Coatney, Jeff Griesch, John Baylor, and Lauren Cook West over the last, like, you go through all of the sports, and it is really something for a university to have this much talent. And I don't think people realize that this is not the norm across college athletics. So glad to have you back in there. Of course, our thoughts are always with Greg Sharp throughout the season, which begins this weekend. And we'll probably dive a lot more into that on Thursday, yeah, just as that season gets underway. But another season just finished, the NFL season, Super Bowl 40-22, and it got out of hand in a hurry. I know there's a lot of Chiefs fans in the area, although they weren't at Pinnacle Bank Arena last night, because anytime a Chiefs fan was shown on the big screen, they got booed. The PBA crowd booed a child, Nick.
Oh, that's
where this is. We had the conversation about who's hated or more hated, but yeah, there's definitely a level of hatred for Chiefs Kingdom, and they do not get the three-peat last night. Just your initial thoughts on that game and the way it played out.
Well, I was with you, and I spent Thursday afternoon talking to three former NFL players who, two of them who actually played in the Super Bowl, and then one who played at such a high level in Zach Miller. All of them took the Chiefs. I was the only one who took the Eagles. And like I told you on Thursday as well, Caleb, I just felt like out of that run since their week five bye, the Eagles' week five bye, that they were at now 15-1, now make it 16-1 since that bye, that this, you could make the argument, both from the eyeball test and from the numbers, that this was the toughest opponent that Kansas City was going to play in their Super Bowl run. And that's, I mean, that's including the Eagles team 2 years ago that was pretty darn good, those 49ers teams that were good, and even Tampa Bay that beat Kansas City, that this Eagles team brought a lot. And we saw, I mentioned the front seven of this defense that was just nasty. Boy, it was the front four. And the fact that they did all that damage on Patrick Mahomes in six sacks, and Vic Fangio did not dial up one blitz. I found myself thinking, in all the things that you and I talked about, and Dave Tolleson, Chris Bober, and Zach Miller and myself talked about on Thursday, maybe the one guy, I don't know if anybody, even in the national broadcasts, talked about as much as far as the different elements and impact type of players and coaches. Nobody really talked about Vic Fangio, and if you put him in a coordinating position, because I know that he was 8-0, or I'm sorry, the Chiefs were 8-0 against Vic Fangio. That's also counting him as a head coach. The head coach thing wasn't necessarily Vic Fangio's strength. Him as a defensive coordinator, I think yesterday showed that he still can scheme. He can still frustrate even some of the very best of offenses, including this Kansas City Chiefs offense, and the best of coordinators when it comes to Andy Reid and Matt Nagy, that what he did reminded people that he is still an elite defensive coordinator. So their defensive effort alone. And then I thought Jalen Hurts, the evolution of his game is outstanding with his ability to run. But when he had to make the big throws and he had to do so with, a quick drop back, when he had to make reads under duress, I thought he was poised. I think his game collectively, where people are like, he doesn't throw the ball. If he has to throw the ball, 30, 40 times, boy, it's advantage opposition. I think he showed again that he continues to learn from his experiences. That was as well-rounded of a game that Jalen Hurts has played with those types of stakes. And I think you can look at what the Chiefs didn't do, but you can't do that without saying, damn, the Eagles were just locked in all three phases.
Yeah, and you talk about Jalen Hurts. He made some good downfield throws.
Yeah.
He made some good throws on the money downfield, and it wasn't that the Eagles were going to live with the passing game. They built the lead, and then it was, okay, we'll pick a little bit here, but it's mostly going to be running the ball. And Jalen Hurts, of course, runs the ball pretty well. Also, my wife actually said something during the game, and there are some times where you're like, yeah, there's a little bit of like want to and just deciding you're going to do something. But my wife, I'll preface with this. She was a Packers fan.
Oh,
she's diehard Taylor Swift. She has become a Chiefs fan over the last couple of seasons. And so we went to Hy-Vee. We got the Chiefs little cakes that they had out there because I like cake and it had the Chiefs on it. So my wife was happy too. So I got to eat a little bit of cake on Super Bowl Sunday.
Doesn't matter who's on it.
I was like, I don't care. Like, what do I care?
It all tastes the same, right?
It's marble buttercream. What do I care what it looks like? It's all about what's on the inside, as we always say. Mm-hmm. But as the game was going, and all of a sudden it's 14-0. It's 21-0. My wife goes, I think the Eagles just decided that there was no way they were going to lose today. And I was like, I think there's something to that. There's something to that. The revenge factor of a couple of seasons ago, the Chiefs having, they're going for a three-peat. And what you don't want to be in the history books is that little side note of who did the Chiefs complete the three-peat over? I know it's the same in a lot of different things in baseball. Who did he get his 3,000th hit on? Mm-hmm. Who did he get his 100th career win against? Who was his last out? Like, there's those types of things you don't want to be. And I was like, you know what? My wife was right. I think there was just enough want to. On top of all of the things schematically and the things that guys did athletically and the way that they executed, there was definitely a degree of want to that the Eagles had that it seemed like the Chiefs didn't show up with to match.
Yeah, and that's it's a very astute point on her part, because the Eagles were saying as much after the game. You don't want to be posterized in history. And that's what the Eagles were up against, was being posterized and being that team that they got the three-peat. And talk about not being that team, but also putting yourself into that rare category of Super Bowl blowouts. Now, the 21 points make it seem a lot closer than that was. To me, that was a 40-6 game. I mean, that's what it felt like. That was a 40-6 game. And so now all of a sudden you're putting yourself in the category of, well, I'll say it. By the way, did she give up on the Packers? Because I want to say, even more of a smart lady coming from a Bears fan here, that's really cool.
Also Bears here. So,
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we can start with one of the greatest blowouts, 46-10, 85 Bears. So the Chiefs have now, or I should say the Eagles have put themselves in that category of most dominant performance. When you think of 46-10, when you think of what the Seahawks did to the Denver Broncos in putting up 50, the Niners and Bengals. I mean, there are some blowouts that we've seen in the last 30, 40 years, but really we've been spoiled with some great finishes as well. When you get a blowout like that and a very lopsided outcome, that stands out, not for the right reasons for the Chiefs, but for Philadelphia, because when we love doing this, especially during the downtime before we really get into the season, of some of the great Super Bowl teams. The Eagles in that performance, given what they were up against with one of the greatest dynasties in modern football, they put themselves in that category of, boy, is this Eagles team one of the greatest Super Bowl teams we've ever seen because of what they did in that game. And if you would have told me that Saquon Barkley would have been held to under 60 yards in this game, I would have thought, oh my gosh, the Eagles are in trouble. But they didn't need him. That was the beauty of it.
Yeah, it was nice to, you know, go to the offseason, make those acquisitions, make those moves, and go, you know what? I guess we could have really plugged in just about any piece in this game, but obviously it helps having those pieces to get you there, including a trio of Huskers. The only one that played last night was Cam Jurgens at center. He recovered enough from the back injuries and kind of the things that were ailing him throughout the playoffs. Nick Gates was actually downgraded, sent to the IR on Saturday, so he wasn't able to be suited up and out there, and Oshon Mathis was on the practice squad for the last couple of months. But that is now a trio of Huskers with Super Bowl rings. When was the last time that happened, Nick Handley?
Oh my gosh, I got to think. It's had to have happened before, right?
It has happened four times.
Was there once when the Broncos won? I know that Tony Veland was there a couple other ones? I don't have it off the top of my head.
So to have a trio of Huskers win the Super Bowl, the last time it happened, 2020, Levante David.
Oh yes. The Bucks.
Sue.
Yep. There you go. Okay.
And then you got to go back to 1989. 49ers. Jamie Williams, Tom Rathman, Roger Craig.
Okay.
Before that, 76 with Oakland. Monty Johnson, Dave Hum, Rick Bonas.
So you're in rare air. That's cool. See, there's a local historical flavor to this one, too, for the Eagles. So, see, Chiefs fans, if you're a Chiefs Nebraska fan, you can take at least some solace in that, knowing that the Huskers were well represented on the biggest stage yesterday.
One more note before we get into some Nebraska men's basketball talk. What a run recently for small-town Southeast Nebraska. Cortland has the new volleyball coach at Nebraska, the preeminent volleyball program in the country. Pickerel has a Super Bowl champion. Look at you, small town Southeast Nebraska. I know anyone around Beatrice is pumped right now.
Yes.
Hey, Beatrice, Freeman, look at you guys. Look at you guys go.
Yeah, and real quickly, you mentioned Cam Jurgens. Did you notice there in the fourth quarter? I think that just the adrenaline of that game had his body capable and effective in that game. But by the fourth quarter, and this is, I think, maybe right before Kansas City scored their second touchdown, Eagles are coming off the field, and he was dragging. He was limping pretty good. I was like, oh man, just, hey, you've been taped together this long for this game. But yeah, you could tell it was wearing on him, but what an effort. I mean, and then that's the thing for Nebraska fans. that transition, and you and I talked about this before too, that transition that he made from tight end to center, then there was the snapping yips that he had in college football. Look at how far he has come, not only to win a Super Bowl, but to replace one of the great offensive linemen that we've seen in the last decade in Jason Kelce. But for him to have that type of effort where he was probably at best 75% physically, and he was still a major factor. I mean, Jalen Hurts was living a pretty good life last night, and a lot of that had to do with the guys up front, including Cam Jurgens. So tip of the cap for that type of effort, given what his body was going through.
All right, Nebraska men's basketball has been on a tear. After losing six in a row, they have now torn off the other direction, winning four in a row, and we're going to see how long that can keep going. But to break down especially last night's game, we've got Wilson Moore from the Omaha World Herald. Wilson, how are you doing this morning? Welcome into Husker Max today.
Thank you for having me, Caleb. I'm doing great.
All right, so that crowd last night, besides booing children wearing Chiefs gear, there was a little bit of juice in the arena, and Nebraska got down, but then Alpha Bryce took back over late in the game. Nebraska started to get to the free throw line, got past 20 free throws, made 18, while Ohio State only shot 15. What was your biggest takeaway, or a couple of takeaways from that game last night, for the men to extend that winning streak to four games?
I think a big part of it, you know, you mentioned Bryce Williams. Nebraska all season long has gone as he has gone. You know, I think one of the driving factors in this now four-game winning streak is Bryce Williams has played like a stud in all four of those games, really beginning with overtime against Illinois when he took control. And then we saw it again yesterday where there's 4 minutes left. I think the game was tied or close to tied, and Nebraska just had the best player on the floor. Bryce Williams, you know, gets downhill, gets to his little spot like in the paint, easy jumper, gets to the line two or three times after that. They just had the guy that they knew they wanted to get the ball in the hands of, and he delivered. You know, I think that's been one of the biggest, if not the biggest factor of this four-game winning streak, is Bryce Williams is back to looking like the guy that we saw in November and December.
Wilson, the thing that I keep going back to, the Washington victory and that come from behind victory on the road, and then yesterday as well, there was a, during that, it, really the beginning of that losing streak that Nebraska had, Fred talking post game, not about the effort, but the toughness. And I think people had to throw the difference between what he's actually talking about and a lot of those 50-50 opportunities that was just eluding Nebraska, where they were essentially being out-toughed in a lot of those games, in the, especially those close games. Yesterday, it was hard not to notice Nebraska flipping the switch right there. Hard to not notice guys like Andrew Morgan all over the floor and that toughness factor that Fred has talked about. I don't know how much you can coach that, but it seems like if there was a message that Fred was sending during that time, that this team received that message rather successfully.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think guys hit the deck for loose balls like five or six times last night. You know, Fred said it was the play of the game, the play when Andrew Morgan poked the ball away from Aaron Bradshaw and dove for it, ended up getting rewarded with a layup. Raleigh Wooster went like parallel to the ground at one point to try to save the ball from going out of bounds. I think about, there was a moment in the first half, Sam Hoiberg, who is listed at a 6 feet even, went up and pulled down a rebound like among the trees, like not like getting to a loose ball, like he boxed out and got above the 7 footers under the basket to get a rebound. Yeah, and that's just toughness, and that's what this Nebraska team has to be built on. You know, Fred Hoiberg has said it all year long, but especially since like the Creighton game, that, you know, this isn't a team that's gonna like outskill a whole lot of teams. No, this isn't last year's team that had just five three-point shooters on the floor at a given time. They got to get after it on the boards. They got to make the hustle plays. They got to be tougher than other teams. And yeah, they got away from that in January, and I think we've seen them get back to that over the past four games.
Up through that six-game losing streak, Nebraska did not beat a single team as long as the opponent shot at least 40% from deep. And now back-to-back games, the opponent has shot exactly 40% from deep. What What are you seeing from this team defensively to take away the three and away over the course of the season, but then also offensively be able to handle a team who is shooting good from 3-point range that they can get back over the hump and, like last night, shot 51% on their own end of the floor?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to, like, I generally try not to attribute things to, like, the kind of mental intangible side of things. But, you know, Fred has talked about how, you know, I think it was the Illinois game when Illinois made shots, Nebraska kept guarding. Whereas, you know, in previous games, the, you know, shoulders would slump a little bit. Guys would hang their heads and there'd be kind of a hangover off of these, you know, possessions if they played good defense and still allowed a tough shot. I don't think we see that. And, you know, rebounding is a big thing. You know, I think they've won the glass in the past three games. That's huge. Like I said, you know, for a team that's not going to make a ton of threes themselves. And, you know, just if you're going to allow teams to shoot a lot of threes, which, as we've seen from Nebraska, they do, you know, that's this team's defense. Opponents are going to shoot 3-pointers. Sometimes they're going to make them, but if you're going to allow them to shoot that many threes, you got to be able to box out and end those possessions, not give them any more chances than they already have. Nebraska's done a good job of that.
Wilson, this win last night doesn't come without obviously some concern and with Burke Buchtengel's injury, and that looked pretty nasty. Him being helped off, it, and as Fred talked about after the game too, that he could definitely miss some time with Maryland coming in with as big as their front court is too. There's maybe some options there when it comes to a lot of shuffling of the lineup. Even when Berkey was healthy, I started wondering what this lineup might look like for however long Buchtengel is out. Where would you maybe start to look at guys that are going to maybe have bigger roles, bigger minutes, and obviously having to play a little bit smarter now too, being down one big guy who was really coming into his own too?
Yeah, you know, I think the obvious choice is Braxton Mia, right? You know, he's this guy who started the first 20-something games of the season, didn't play for two games, has been back, you know, I wouldn't say in the rotation over the past three, but has gotten kind of spot minutes in the first half. And I think he's played well in against Oregon, against Washington, and against against Ohio State. I think Nebraska's going to need more from him. You know, he obviously has a very different skill set from Berke. You know, he's not the shooter, he's not the passer Berke is, but he can protect the rim. He can get rebounds. He's a big body. We saw him contribute offensively the other day. He had 5 points in 7 minutes, including hitting some free throws, which were an issue for him early in the season. So I think Braxton Mia is the obvious place you look to. Now, whether that's starting or coming off the bench, that's to be determined. You know, you can make a case for Andrew Morgan starting at the five. I'm not sure you can play the two of them together. I don't think they have this year. I'm just not sure you can get the kind of spacing you need in today's game with the two of them on the floor together. But I think those two in kind of a timeshare at the center with obviously, you know, more minutes from Mia than we've seen over the past few games, just out of necessity.
Do you think we can get 40 minutes between the two of those and whatever it would be, 25 for Andrew Morgan? It was only 7 minutes last night for Braxton Mia, and it was a really efficient 7 minutes for him. And he played really, really well. I actually think he could have scored more if Berke would have passed him the freaking ball in the paint, but that's its own thing. Can you get 25 and 15 a split on the minutes between those two at the five, or is there going to have to be some time, obviously, if there's foul trouble, where you're going to have to go pretty small ball across the lineup against this team on Thursday?
I mean, I think you have to get 40 minutes out of them. I don't know that, you know, maybe there are teams that you can get weird against with, you know, someone, I don't even know, like Jawan Gary at 6'6" at the five. I don't know that you can do that against anyone in the Big Ten. I'm just spitballing here, but I think especially against Maryland, with as big as that team is, throwing Derek Queen and Julian Reese at teams, I think you need size in there. And I think you need one of those guys on the floor at all times if Berke is out. And I think that goes back to what we were just talking about. Like, you got to play smart. You know, if you're Andrew Morgan or Braxton Mia, you can't pick up two fouls in the first 7 minutes. You know, that's just going to put you behind the eight ball against a team as strong and tough as Maryland.
Offensively, going back to Bryce and what he did, especially in that key stretch there at the end of the first half where you've got three guys in foul trouble and all of a sudden that offense is squarely on him. Is there any, as we're in February now, we're reaching the midway point of February. Gosh, conference tournament's going to be here before we know it. Is there concern on your part at all, Wilson, that he's taken on too much of that role, that those legs start going out, that jump shot starts to maybe fall a little bit short because he is taking on too much? And if that's the case, in this final stretch before we get to the postseason here, who is, in your opinion, one or even two guys that are going to be those complementary pieces that need to be there every night?
Yeah, you know, I think it's always a concern, you know, not even necessarily for Bryce specifically, but just kind of everyone at this point in the season. You know, like I remember last year, people were saying just, you know, everyone's banged up this time of year. You know, no one's completely healthy. Everyone's tired. Everyone's kind of in that final kick, you know, about a month until conference tournament time. So I think that's always just kind of a natural thing. I don't know how much it's a concern for Bryce specifically more than anyone else. But to your other question of complementary pieces, I'll give you two, and they're guys with opposite offensive games. One is Jawan Gary. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen over the past few games, especially like Washington and Oregon, what he can do as a scorer and the dimension he brings, you know, the toughness of a guy who says, I'm going to get to the basket. I'm going to let people bounce off of me and finish in a kind of unorthodox way off a weird foot at the rim. And the other is Connor Asigin. And Asigin, you know, on a team that so badly needs shooting and has been inconsistent from beyond the arc, Asigin is the guy who can take the lid off the basket. You know, there have been a few games already this year where shots haven't been falling and he's come off the bench, hit a couple threes and just kind of loosened things up for everybody. And, you know, I think we saw it in the non-con. We haven't quite seen it as much in conference play, just that game where he catches fire and hits 7 3-pointers, you know. Yeah. But we know, you know, everyone who watches knows Connor Asigin is capable of that. And there's a good chance that on a given night that can happen. So I think, you know, if you figure Bryce Williams has to be Nebraska's constant, then I think those two guys are the guys who can kind of elevate that offense to another level.
This team was looking just a couple of weeks ago at the potential of missing the Big Ten tournament. Now, sitting at eighth in the league, which would give them a bye away from that first day. Yeah. And they would put them in the 8-9 game. They would take on whoever is the one seed when it gets into the Big Ten tournament time, which, by the way, right now would be Purdue. It would be nice to face them not at Mackey Arena. I think everyone in the league
would only be an hour away, though. It'd only be
as long as it's not at Mackey, I feel like everyone is kind of just going to take what they've got. But if you're Nebraska and you finish up at an 8 seed, you have probably over these final 7 games won 4 of them. You know, and that gets you to 20 wins. Wilson, for you, as you look at this team, and there's a lot of the metrics are saying it, almost a lock at 19, definitely. For some of them, definitely a lock at 19, but getting to 20, they were to go 4-3 over this last stretch. You completely, that more than erases that 6-game losing streak, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's crazy that this team went from, like you said, the conversation was about missing the Big Ten tournament to back on the bubble in like 5 days between that Illinois and that Oregon game. I still can't wrap my head around it. But yeah, I mean, I think 19 wins gets Nebraska into the tournament. That's, you know, at the end of the regular season, that's 9 wins in Big Ten play. And with how deep this conference is, I think that probably gets you in. You know, I think I think the Big Ten probably sends 9 teams or so to the tournament. Going into this, the stretch on the schedule I kept looking at, I mean, after they lost 5 straight, was the one that they're in the middle of right now, beginning with Washington, then Ohio State, Maryland, at Northwestern, at Penn State. I remember looking at that and saying that's 5 games that are all winnable. Are they will they win all of them? Probably not, because this is the Big Ten and the Big Ten is weird and it's hard to win. it's hard to win every game that's, you know, close to a toss-up. But that was the big run that I felt like, you know, when they lost six straight, I remember thinking, like, for them to have any chance, they need to win all five of those. Now, I wasn't banking at the time on them beating Illinois and Oregon, and that kind of changes the complexion of things.
Right.
But I think the general point still stands of, like, these now, they're now two games into it. These next three games are all winnable. And for a team that still, you know, needs to just rack up wins and just slowly get out of this, you know, hole they dug with the six game losing streak, the next three, I think, are pretty important.
Yeah. And Caleb brought up what they were doing defensively too. And it just, I go back to what Fred was illustrating with this team during their struggles, whether it was the defensive side. We all remember the 3-point percentage from the opposition, that is, but also just going back 2 years ago, Wilson, when we go back to the Derek Walker and Sam Griesel team, of maybe the first time we could all look at a roster and say this wasn't just built for on-court success, but also within the locker room too. And it seems like that formula has continued as far as how he pieces these rosters together year in and year out. Is there a sense of that, in your opinion, during that six-game losing skid, that, again, you've got a strong locker room, you've got a very even-keel coach that is never too high or too low, that is also probably a big factor in them being able to get that much-needed win against Illinois and now be able to ride that success, being able to handle the successful moments and also be able to get off the schneid, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of how this roster was built, how this roster and last year's roster, where the kind of full figureheads from a leadership standpoint were Rink Mast and Josiah Alek. Mm-hmm. And now this year, yeah, you know, Fred has said a few times just throughout the offseason, throughout the year, they wanted to get old and stay old.
Yeah,
you know, that's how they tried to build this out of the portal, is veteran guys who have been around, who know how to play college basketball, who are smart players, because you know, Nebraska can run a pretty complex offense. So, yeah, you know, just the other day, Hoiberg said he never felt like guys totally lost it during that streak, you know, like from an emotions standpoint. You know, he never felt like guys were totally down and out mentally. So, I think that absolutely has something to do with it.
Wilson, hey, we really appreciate you jumping on Husker Max today, talking a little Husker basketball. And you're not a Chiefs fan, are you?
I'm not. No, I'm.
There we go.
My team, if you can see, you
know
that.
Hey, I know this is a Bears show. We will allow it. You and the Purple People Eaters. Thanks for coming.
Appreciate
on.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
There you go. That is Wilson Moore from the Omaha World Herald, talking a little Nebraska men's basketball. We'll keep that conversation going, Nick, because in the arena, it felt like a lot during that first half, especially with the inconsistent officiating. The crowd had a hatred for the Zebras.
Right out of the gate, too, there was a call on Juwan Gary. Like, what? Huh?
Yeah, so for me, and I know that that's – you kind of just have to deal with it on whether something's a bad call or there's inconsistent calls. And to me, inconsistent calls are worse than bad calls, because at least with bad calls, you go, okay, that's what we're dealing with. With inconsistent calls, you don't know how physical you can be anywhere. It seemed like there were touch fouls, ticky-tack things inside, but you were allowed to manhandle somebody on the outside. And then it would be a ticky-tack foul out there. It's like, it's so tough for the players to know how physical they can be,
right?
Not just game to game, but almost it was possession to possession last night. But Nebraska stuck through it. The crowd stuck through it. There was a lot of juice in that second half. You have an 8-0 run to tie it up, and then you have an 11-0 run to take the lead for good and never look back and get to the line. Alpha Bryce, all the free throws down the stretch. The crowd was juiced. The players looked juiced. Four-game winning streak, and suddenly everything feels good. Most of the metrics are saying right now, let's see, like Bart Torvik says 87.4% that Nebraska men's basketball is in the tournament right now.
And all of the this is where I go back to pre six game losing streak. those non-conference wins, the Creighton one, and that one is aging extremely well, obviously.
Good but, job, Creighton.
Yeah, thank you, Creighton, for keeping that going. There's a lot about what they were able to establish themselves early in the season that maybe it did give you a little bit of cushion that if you were to face some type of a skid, which Nebraska probably a little bit longer than they had anticipated or would have liked to have seen. But this is why I go back, and this is why I asked the question to Wilson. And I thought yesterday's game, Caleb, was a perfect example of this, of where this team is connected. And when you have what is going to happen in college basketball, especially in a conference like the Big Ten, where you're going to be playing some very good teams, or you're just going to be having some nights where maybe you are out physical, whatever the situation is, and you fall short on the scoreboard, what is that going to do to your team? Because as we talk about a lot, you get into February, you start to take on that look of the team that you're going to be in the postseason, whether your postseason plans are just the conference tournament or beyond, you start to take on that form. And I think that's a good thing for Nebraska, because what they were up against yesterday, yeah, I'm with you. I thought the officiating was extremely inconsistent, but this is where I go back to the leadership of Fred Hoiberg. He's a guy that if he needs to have a conversation or two with the officials, he'll do so, but he'll do so in a Fred manner, that you've got so many veterans, guys that have experienced different levels of college basketball and in different conferences, that there's really nothing that is going to overwhelm them or shock them. And I thought yesterday's game was an example of that, where Ohio State, especially in the first half, they are throwing big run after big run at this team. And then as that's happening, you have guys going down with foul trouble where you're extremely limited on what you can do. And then so you look at Bryce. Bryce carries the load. But Wilson is spot on about that complimentary piece, too, when you got Juwan Gary, who, you know, whether he's in foul trouble or not, he's giving you some of that instant offense, but also he's able to give you a lot of those gritty plays. Andrew Morgan was huge in that moment as well, where this is where I go back to the culture of this team, not just their overall ability to score buckets, to make defensive stops, but in the moments to maintain that even keel approach to where their emotions don't run too hot and all of a sudden that just defines them. Because if that was the case, what Ohio State was doing on top of some of the calls that maybe weren't necessarily going Nebraska's way, that thing could have been extremely ugly at halftime. Nebraska was down, yes, but kind of how I felt at the halftime of the Washington game of, Washington ain't going to come out and shoot that good in the second half. Can Nebraska take advantage? They did, just like in this game. Nebraska could have been down by a lot more than they were at halftime with the foul situation. Thank you, Bryce. But they're still within reach. And now then we saw what happened in the second half. There's a toughness with this team that I think was called out a little bit by Fred earlier. And I think there is a connection with this team, a very connected group, that despite when things are going bad, that they just don't seem to get really destroyed by that emotionally or physically.
The last two games, the way Nebraska went into halftime, down 10 at Washington and the Huskies shooting lights out.
Yeah.
Last night, Nebraska made one shot in the final 6.5 minutes of the game, or 6.5 minutes of the half. To come out of halftime both of those games and play their best basketball. You're right. There is a toughness to that. There is a mentality to that, to get into the locker room, not be pointing fingers and let it all just unravel in the way that, you know what, things did unravel during that six-game losing streak. And I don't know what, if there was necessarily pointing fingers or anything, but as Wilson said, there was some slumped shoulders at times if things started to kind of go wrong. And you haven't had that happen. You had Illinois come all the way back and it go to overtime, and then you take over in overtime, and you go to Oregon and you only trail for 46 seconds over the course of the entire game. Washington shoots lights out and you take over in the second half. And then last night, take over in the second half again, and it be a free throw party. Yeah. And you go in and you make your free throws. Braxton Mia went 3 for 3 on his free throws in the first half. Everyone's getting in on making the free throws. And it feels good for this team as they're going through and pushing towards a potential NCAA tournament bid. Like I said, most of the places are saying Nebraska is in. When I looked on Friday, which actually is the last time that this was updated from Joe Lunardi, he had Nebraska as the last of the last four byes.
Right.
So yeah. So the fifth to the last team in when you're looking at it. And to grab a win last night, where some of the analytics, I think Nebraska was a slight favorite last night, but some of the analytics pointed towards Ohio State winning that game. You grab that, I think you're getting off of that last four buys line. Like, that's where this team is you're pushing yourself off of the bubble. And if Nebraska gets off the bubble, by the way, that would be 10 Big Ten teams in the field, none of them waiting to see how the bubble turns out.
Right. And isn't that a great place if Nebraska, I was looking at a bubble watch, Neil Payne from ESPN.com. And you're right, because I think it was when we first spoke last Monday, they were the very last team in.
Yeah.
And now they are the last of the four byes. So they're obviously heading in the right direction there. But also with the bubble watch, I think their percentage, and it's a different calculation, depends on who you look at, but they're at 57% chance. I think that's the lowest, actually, that's one of the lower ones I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also is extremely complimentary as far as their breakdown of who they've beaten and what they've done since that losing streak, that essentially the BPI has them with the games coming up. Now, Maryland's going to be tough, especially with Berkey's injury. Yes. That one concerns me, but going to Northwestern, having Penn State, those are very winnable games. Now, we've talked about this. The good is you're favored in those matchups. You match up well, even maybe without Burke in there, but you don't gain a lot. So you have a lot more to lose there, but BPI favors Nebraska in those games. So then you're starting to have that number get closer to what you and I both agree is 19. It's probably a good spot to be. So I think even with that 57% chance of making it in, which is lower than most, there's still a lot of optimism in that breakdown that number will go up. And you're right. You brought this up to Wilson 2 weeks ago, Caleb. 2 weeks ago, they were on the bubble of even – they were on the wrong side of the bubble of making their own conference tournament. It A, shows you quick turnaround, great job by Fred and this entire team of weathering that storm, but B, also how volatile that conference is. And if you are down – You might need just a week or two to really change your fortunes. Or, as we've seen with certain teams, if you're up, all of a sudden 2 weeks, boom, you're right there where Nebraska was too. Look at where UCLA is now. Since that loss to Nebraska, UCLA was 7 in a row. So, you know, there's just so much volatility in this conference that you can never take a night for granted. But also, as long as there's still some games on your schedule and you're sitting there in the lower half or middle part of this conference, you've got a shot. Look at where Nebraska has moved.
Maryland and Michigan are the only teams Nebraska has left on the schedule that are higher in the Big Ten standings than where Nebraska is. 16-8 for the team on the season, 6-7 in Big Ten play. Can you find three more wins?
Right.
Can you find three more before you get to the Big Ten tournament? And that's your starting point, because it's the same thing as when this losing streak was going on. It was, where can you find your wins? Can you look at the rest of the season at the time with only 12 wins? Can you find eight more wins? Can you find where those are? And right now it's, okay, can you get three? And part of that is because of the way the rest of the bubble has played out, the way those teams are playing. I know you think back to Tim Miles' team and finishing, fourth in the Big Ten and not making the NCAA tournament. That's not the way the league is now, and that's not the way the bubble is now. It's not a very strong bubble. Mm-hmm. So Nebraska being able to keep themselves in that conversation and play themselves off of that bubble, extremely encouraging. And we'll have another show before we even get to that game on Thursday, because we'll be back here Thursday 9 a.m. but it is nice that we're able to have these conversations about where this team is in relation to getting back to the NCAA tournament. Before we get to Nate Rohr, who will be connecting with us in just a second to talk about Nebraska softball, who has got some high expectations about their season and what they want to do in the postseason. Nebraska women's basketball tonight at home against Iowa, trying to run it back. They got a win in Iowa City, trying to grab a win at home tonight at Pinnacle Bank Arena. Well, as if he was summoned via Beetlejuice, 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 we said Nate Rohr, and he appears. And that's how we go ahead and there's the one that I want. Nate Rohr, voice of Husker Softball and KLIN Sports Director. Nate, it was a started out like a really, really hot weekend, 3-0, and then a couple of tough games down the stretch. What was it like for you down in Florida?
Well, you know, if you would have told me a week ago Nebraska was going to go 3-2 in its first weekend of the year, being a Northern team that hadn't been out on the dirt yet, playing three ranked opponents, possibly facing two first-team All-American pitchers, I would have been pretty happy with that. But the Tennessee win on Thursday, I think, made us all a little greedy. So you're still happy with 3-2. I think that's still a successful weekend, you know, even just beyond you won more than you lost. But you do feel like you left some meat on the bone, especially the Saturday game where Nebraska had a 5-0 lead on Texas Tech in the bottom of the sixth inning, only to squander it, mainly due to defensive errors. And then Jordy Ball made one bad pitch to Nigeri Kennedy, and she hit it over the fence. But credit to Tech for taking advantage of their one big opportunity and then building up one more good one and cashing it in on a Husker error in the seventh. So maybe you're happy, but I don't know that you're satisfied with what you got last weekend, and that's okay. I mean, it's the first weekend of the year. You certainly want to be great every time out, but happy but not satisfied, I think, is where I am after last weekend.
Yeah, Nate, I think the big storyline that everybody was anticipating going in is what would Jordy look like, obviously impacting at the plate and in the circle. But we forget the last time we saw her at least stringing consecutive starts in the circle together was in a different uniform, and that feels like it was forever ago. So when you look at where she is coming off the ACL, but where you would anticipate her to be as she continues to get more competitive innings under her belt, where do you see that ceiling with Jordy right now?
Well, I think she's most of the way back. The one concern you have, and maybe it came forward down the stretch of that Texas Tech game, is in stamina. Mm-hmm. And she, in the sixth and seventh inning, wasn't quite as sharp and was getting hit a little harder. And that's to take nothing from Texas Tech, which has pretty good lineup, pretty good hitters. But, you know, there was also a little element that maybe Jordy wasn't quite where she had been in the earlier part of the game. So I think that's the part that can sharpen up with her. And we even saw that in the fall, where Jordy would dominate the first three innings, four innings, whatever, that she was out there. And then she would start to maybe not struggle, but definitely not dominate either, the fifth inning, the sixth inning, what have you. So I think rebuilding her stamina is kind of the place where growth can still happen. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that's just going to happen as the year goes on, because for a game and a half, she looked the part of an All-American pitcher. I mean, she was hitting her spots, good velocity. The changeup was working. So for a game and a half, she was really, really, really good. And even, I think, pitched well enough those last couple innings to hold on against Tech. But the defense kind of went sideways on her. And we see that happen sometimes when a Northern team gets out on dirt for the first time.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's so much of the conversation this season is going to revolve around Jordy Ball. And you think back to the season tickets that were sold when she announced her transfer, and the additional seating that has been added since then. Like, that is, there's no way to go away from what Jordy Ball means to the enthusiasm around this program. But obviously, this team has to have some other pieces play well for there to be success over the course of this year. And you had Ava do that over the weekend, starting all five games, hitting .467. And as of right now, leads the team in runs, hits, RBIs, slugging percentage, home runs. Like that, that is a nice piece to have there with what you brought in with Ava Kuschak.
Yeah. Ava is one of the few known quantities on this team, at least in terms of the hitters, in that you know she's going to lead off and you know she's going to play shortstop. When we talked with Rhonda Revelle in preseason, she talked about having numerous options at basically every other spot in the lineup and in the defensive lineup other than pitching. And so it's good to have that mainstay at the top of the order. And I think Ava's bat is going to play pretty much all season long. She did it last year for Wisconsin. I suspect she'll be able to do it just as well for Nebraska. She's going to have Jordy Ball hitting behind her, and Jordy has shown that she can hit at this level pretty proficiently. So you feel like she's always going to be well protected in the lineup. She'll see pitches to hit, and she can do something with them. And so I think Ava's going to be a mainstay at the top of the order and do some really nice work for Nebraska. And especially when you set up the batting order, I think she's going to be a real cornerstone for the rest of it. But, you know, it's going to be a mission the next month before Big Ten to set the rest of this batting order, because there are so many options and there are lots of good options. But I think as the year goes on and before we get too deep into the year, I think Rhonda wants to define some of those other rules a little more clearly.
And with that, Nate, how much of that is going to be impacted by what you're seeing on the dirt itself defensively? Because, I'll ask you this question as well. You mentioned it's one of their first experiences of being outside and actually handling the softball through the elements that they're going to be faced with going forward, but some defensive miscues here and there. How much of what Rhonda is going to put together in that lineup is going to be once they feel like they've solidified that entire defensive unit?
You know, I think the values are going to compete there a little bit, because I think it's tough to put together your best offensive lineup that's really good defensively too. And
right.
And kind of a unique challenge that Coach Revelle has with this year's team is that I feel like there are a lot of people who are either one or the other. They're either really good defensively and the bat hasn't quite got there yet, or the bat's there and they're going to hit, but maybe they're not fielding at the best place. And what's more, even more challenging, I think, is that you look at who is strong and who are your great hitters, but they also play premium defensive positions. Hey, you know, Ava Cusack had kind of a rough weekend defensively. Mm-hmm. And while there's a chunk of that I think you very easily can ride off to first weekend jitters, just looking back at her track record, she has been fine defensively, but she's not been notable defensively. And yet shortstop's a position where you want elite defense. You know, third base is the same thing, where Samantha Bland's a really good hitter. And I, you know, she, I think, can grow back into third base. I think her growth curve's going to look a little different just because she played outfield last year. Mm-hmm. Bland played third base, played the infield all the way coming up, but she's got to get settled back in there. And then you look at a position like first base with Bella Bacon, and she's decent defensively. And she's decent with the bat, but, you know, just like baseball, you expect first base to be an offensive
yep.
first position. And right now that's not the case. Left field's another. You know, Abby Squire's a decent to good defensive outfielder. And yet because she missed the whole year last year, I think it's going to take a while for her bat to get back up to speed, and left field somewhere where you want somebody that hits. So there are just lots of things that Rhonda will need to settle with this lineup in the next few weeks. And that's not to say that the options aren't there on the roster right now, but that just is to say that maybe the combination hasn't really revealed itself mm-hmm. yet.
One more on the positions, because we know for the battery in the circle, it's Jordy Ball number one.
Yeah,
but what about the other end of that with catcher? Because there's been a little rotation there.
I think that will persist. That's certainly in their plan. partially dependent on who is pitching, because they feel pretty good about the combination of Ava Breadwell and Kylie McGee, and then Hannah Kamenzen and Ava Breadwell, and then Jordy Ball. Throughout the preseason, Jordy worked primarily with Olivia DiNardo. And so when DiNardo came up with a bit of an elbow injury this last week, that changed the catching equation, because, you know, especially against a team against like Tennessee, Texas Tech's another that runs a whole lot. You know, Ava Breadwell at close to 100% beats Olivia DiNardo at 80% or 70% or whatever it was.
Right.
So the short of it, to answer your question, Caleb, is we're going to see that position split. Now, the question is, what do you do with the one that isn't catching? Because I think it's a pretty safe bet that Olivia DiNardo is going to be in the batting order basically every game, one way or the other. Going to catch or going to serve as the designated player. But Ava Breadwell's an interesting case because she has hit. When we talked with the coaching staff in preseason, they said she had really taken to playing outfield. She'd played quite a bit of right field in preseason. She really hadn't done that in her career. But Ava's fairly athletic and has a good arm and could be pretty decent out there. And that's a way to keep her bat in the lineup without having her catch 50 games, which I think has been a real detriment to her. So I think that's going to be the tougher balance, is keeping both of them in the lineup while at the same time catching one and not catching the other every single game.
Real quickly, just because I know it was also a anticipated return, just because anytime there's a local product, they transfer back into Nebraska. But Casey Hoffman, just by some of your own calls that I caught, not only did she have an impact, but when she wasn't getting on base, maybe more the recipient of some bad luck.
Yeah, you know, I think her swing's coming around. She was able to get some hits and stack up some opportunities, and the Huskers feel really good about her power. She's coming back from an injury last year that knocked her out the whole year. So she's probably still finding her legs and still finding her way, but I think Nebraska expects her to be an impact bat throughout the line or throughout the season in the heart of the order, a power bat, left-hand hitter. She's going to factor into the equation, no question.
Last minute here, Nate, the voice of Husker softball. Nebraska still on the road, as they will be for some time, headed to Las Cruces, New Mexico. Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, New Mexico State, Montana twice, and Northern Colorado. All of that coming up this weekend. It's not quite the same as Florida, but still a lot of opportunity out in front of this team to stack wins.
Yeah, and hey, I think it's fair to say Nebraska's a fairly substantial favorite. I don't think Vegas has taken action on it, but NCAA, don't bet on it. But Nebraska, I think, figures as a significant favorite in those five games, and it's an opportunity to kind of settle some of these questions, whether it's the infield combination, whether it's the outfield combination, whether it's how you stack up the lineup. It's a chance to experiment a little more in a lower pressure environment and see what you have and see if you can build some continuity and confidence. And they're going to need to build some this week, because the Mary Nutter tournament the following week is going to be a real challenge.
Nate, that is a good looking office you are coming to us from. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes on Husker Max today.
Hey, thank you for handing off the office. I'll tell you that.
It's still decorated beautifully. Hey, have a good one, man.
See you, gentlemen.
See you, Nate.
There you go. That is Nate Rohr, voice of Nebraska softball and KLIN sports director. Nick, like he said, headed this weekend, and it's a little bit of what we've looked at with Nebraska men's basketball. Maybe not the ranked opportunities to go get signature wins, but it's a chance to stack them and get things right.
Yeah, and I think that goes to say, for even with baseball starting soon, you start to look at certain areas of the schedule where it's like, okay, what you don't get from an RPI standpoint you start to find maybe a little bit of a winning combination, a little winning formula, and especially in the ball bat sports where you're looking for that right ingredients when it comes to, like Nate said too, trying to match the offense with the defense, but finding the lineup that's going to get make the most sense, it's going to be most productive, figuring out that rotation. Those types of weekends can really serve that purpose so well. And the quicker you can feel like you've got, okay, this combination works against righties, this combination works against lefties, this is our best offensive squad, this is our more of our power, if we feel like we're going to, you know, having to chase some runs, we're going to need as many as we can, you start to get those ideas early. And if you can do that before you even get out of the month of February, that is a huge thing, especially for this softball team that obviously has a lot of options. It's just finding the right options and where to put them.
Don't forget Nebraska women's basketball at home tonight, taking on Iowa. Go ahead and feel free to pack PBA, even though that's not the promotion they're running. Just fill it up.
All right, this is a Caleb Henry promotion.
Yeah, this is a I want you there because I will be there as well. Come say hi if you ever are going to one of these men's or women's basketball games. Slide through the media area. Feel free to say hello. I'll chat with you for a couple of minutes. But I'm Caleb Henry. That's Nick Hanley. We'll be back Thursday, 9 a.m. right here on the Husker Max YouTube page as well as Twitch. And you can also get the podcast in audio form on all of your favorite podcast platforms. That'll do it for us on a Monday, February 10th. Go Big Red, and we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.